mix, what I like, what I like, what I like, what I like.
So let's see if we can get Dr. Jared Ball in here and bring him in. As I said, if I mix what I like.org. I might be wrong, but you can find him on Twitter at I mix what I like. Dr. Jared Ball, author of The Myth of Black Buying Power, welcome to the show.
It's a pleasure to be here. Thanks for joining, or thanks for having me. Thank you.
No, great to see you. I have you on a TV to my side, so if I look randomly, it's because I'm actually looking at you. I just want people on Twitter not to think that there's some weird thing off on the right. So to just get right into it, you know, controversy swept Twitter last night. Lil Wayne put up a post. Whatever intern, I guess, who wrote it and posted it, him with President Donald Trump, endorsing Donald Trump, endorsing the Platinum Plan. I have to be honest with you, I had not actually looked at Donald Trump's Platinum Plan until then. So we can get into all of that, but I guess I just wanted to know maybe some of your initial thoughts. I mean, obviously we always see this. We saw JD with Biden, we've seen 50 Cent. Right towards the end of the election, there's always a rush of these celebrities to appear. Maybe just top line thoughts about what we saw from Weezy F last night.
Well, first of all, the first thing that I think needs to be said, I want to start with appreciating what you and your comrades at Breakthrough are doing, because so much of what we have to suffer is a commercial media environment that imposes so much negativity and misinformation and poor analysis. So what you and others are doing has helped, you know, me and many others, break through and break away from some of that commercial media. And we really need that. So thank you for that. And then as that relates, you know, to the initial question here, of course, is that so many of these artists, regardless of what we think of their talent, and I happen to think that there's a great amount of it there, they are all known to us, not primarily because of that talent, but primarily because they are sponsored and promoted by these most elite corporations with all kinds of incestuous relationships around the world and connected to all kinds of harmful and damaging politics and policies. So in some way, this is all connected in so much of this discussion and related discussions is sort of poisoned by this commercial imposition. So whatever we think of Lil Wayne or these other artists, again, they're primarily the products at this point, commercially speaking, of these enterprises and processes. So to start with, that's why what you're doing and what, you know, is so important, because, you know, these conversations have to be expanded beyond that. Now, you know, after that, my initial reaction is, of course, it's easy for me and others to say, well, we don't agree with people siding with Trump or working with Trump. And as we've seen with Ice Cube or, you know, going even back to certainly the beginnings of my childhood, you know, with James Brown and Nixon, mm-hmm. and some of the boxers you've talked about. I mean, this has been a long time problem. But the real thing that I'm noticing now, whether it's with Ice Cube or 50 or Lil Wayne, is that the reaction is, to me, more telling than the mm-hmm. initial, you know, act itself. First of all, they're doing this largely in response to the fact that the Democratic Party that has been presenting itself as our only option for so many decades doesn't do anything or much at all. So the conditions that these men in particular are coming out of, and the communities that they're coming out of, are suffering the ravages of policy supported by the Democratic Party, who now sends its representatives largely through its wing of the commercial media to lambast and vilify these people for making their decisions. And then lastly, I'll say, you know, we often say we want our celebrities to be involved and to be, you know, active and do things politically. But then, of course, when they don't do exactly what we want, or in this case, exactly what the mainstream liberal left want, they get condemned. And I would say very lastly, forgive me for this, is that really, and then my ultimate conclusion is that those of us on the real so-called left or radical pockets of this world have to do more to organize ourselves so that when artists like this decide they want to get involved, they're not so easily snatched up by the most conservative elements of our society.
Yeah, I want to circle back on that in a little bit and kind of pick up maybe on the Ice Cube and Diddy thing and how it relates to organization. But I didn't mention randomly the your new book, The Myth of Black Buying Power, because, you know, one of the things that really struck me, not only actually about Trump's Platinum Plan, but even a lot of how we saw Biden, certainly Michael Bloomberg and others in the Democratic primary, talk about the issues facing the black community, it's all more or less framed in this sort of wealth building context, which is not, I mean, obviously it's what the book is about, and your book is about much more than that, but I think it circles around these issues. And that to me seems important to the substance of, you know, when we're talking about what are the options for the Black community, the real question is, what are they offering? And it seems like the framing in and of itself is so problematic. I mean, it sounds good to people, like Trump says, increase Black access to capital by $500 billion or whatever. Biden will just say it a different way, increase Black wealth. Of course, in the town hall 2 weeks ago, I think it was, there was the whole extended discussion where he was talking about, you know, the need to buy a home. And obviously redlining and discrimination is terrible and ridiculous, but basically saying if we just can eliminate that and that all Black people can buy homes, everything's going to be fine.
Well, first of all, we have to start, whether it's these issues of capital infusion to Black businesses or reparations, we're talking about a situation where Black people are appealing to two political parties, both of which have said they don't even want to give money and resources to their own people, their own white American community, in the middle of a pandemic. So we're really in a difficult situation if Black people are now going to be asking for something specific for themselves from these same parties. But certainly part of what I try to address in my book is the role that celebrity has played in promoting a tendency towards Black capitalism and Black business development as a response to, you know, enslavement, colonization, Jim and Jane Crow, and economic inequality, which has been something that has been promoted and encouraged for at least, you know, 150 years or more. Specifically to keep Black people from organizing social and political movements, and certainly radical social and political movements. The idea has always been, well, let's impose this idea that Black capitalism is a solution, Black business, Black banking is a solution. And then this, of course, will discourage everybody from realizing that it's really political power, social movement power, and public policy that determines everything from how we generate wealth to who gets it. So as it's been directed specifically at Black people, there has been a very particularly developed and deployed program of propagandizing Black communities towards this conclusion for a long time. So what we're seeing with these celebrities today is part of a pattern that, again, has been encouraged for a long time. And I do want to say you were right at the beginning. You know, people can, you know, and sort of illustrative of the point I'm trying to also make in the book. As a response to the uprisings over the summer, the publisher has agreed to offer my book, at least in its digital form, for free to support Black Lives Matter and protests, et cetera. So people can get that at imixwhatilike.org. They can go there and download, get the link and download it for free. But that's sort of really what my point is. It's not a response to an economic condition or a policy or a Black business plan. It was a response to what was apparent, even if not organized at the level I would like to see, people uprising in the streets that made the publisher in this instance of my book and others make a decision. And I think that that's ultimately what has to be done writ large if we really want to see something happen progressively in this country.
Yeah, you know, I think it's a good point. And for those who are just tuning in or tuned in a little bit ago, we are joined here on Breakthrough News by Dr. Jared Ball, who, as you just heard him mention, is the author of the recent book, The Myth of Black Buying Power, which you can get for free. My dad used to always say, if it's free, take it. So I'd encourage you to go to imixwhatilike.org, get a copy of it. It's more than just free, though. Fantastic book. And, you know, one of the things, Jared, I found myself thinking about when I saw this Lil Wayne tweet, and I know we've talked about this before a while ago, was that Clarence Avant documentary on Netflix. And I was just thinking of that scene where the Paramount guy is talking about, they were in some meeting with all these top executives in the 80s, and he was going around telling people who represented what's company, and they go, well, who's that guy? And he was like, oh, well, Clarence represents everyone. And the conversation around sort of neocolonialism in a way, and the role that these individuals are playing. I mean, I hate to make it too negative about an individual, but I feel like we take a lot of times these entertainers who have reached a certain level of prominence, a certain level of financial acumen, and of course they present it as if, well, we're big players in the capitalist system now. But even if you look at someone like Jay-Z, and this is not shade, I mean, obviously he's got a lot more money than me, but you know, he's a tiny minority owner of the Nets, but he's representing himself as if he's like Warren Buffett. And I feel like that almost, it really warps the consciousness, I think, especially of young people, about what the real structure of this system is and who these black faces that seem to be representative, because you see Meek Mill at the club with Robert Kraft, like where they really sit in the capitalist hierarchy and what that says about a lot of what they're saying.
Just as long as we don't see Meek Mill with Robert Kraft on those videos at those after hours massage parlors that came out, you know, I think that would be, I think Meek Mill probably appreciate that. You know, but to your point, I mean, first of all, the neo-colonial comparison is perfect because, of course, you know, Jay-Z, I don't even think he has that minority ownership anymore, pun intended, of the Nets. And he was just used to help gentrify Brooklyn and you know, help that process along. In the same way that Clarence Avant, you know, noted as the Black Godfather, is someone who is paid or was paid very well to bring the natural resource of Black cultural artistic talent to white commercial, you know, organized enterprise for their benefit. And then he was paid well in the process. And then throughout that entire documentary, he's telling us how it's all about the money and it has to be about the business. And yet he, you know, it sort of softballed that when he ran into trouble, he could go to his elite, you know, funders and sponsors and have them buy him a house. And I think any of us who, you know, would find ourselves with a great, you know, economic advantage if we had a nice expensive home bought for us in full by someone else. And then if you just keep going up that ladder, we saw again this summer the extension of that, where that same elite class was able to use the public policy apparatus of the United States government to redirect resources, some out of whole cloth, to themselves, to float themselves with CARES and HOPE Acts, while the rest of us were left with little to nothing. And then have both, again, in their elite status represented through their political parties, have determined that everybody will just have to make do until sometime after the elections and into the next year. So, I mean, this is part of what's really going on. So, and that's why, to me, as much as, again, as where I started, it's easy to say we don't want, you know, our favorite or not so favorite rappers siding with these, you know, right wing politicians. But the reality is, if the so-called left wing opposition actually opposed what the right wing was doing and offered these communities something, then all of this would be moot in the first place. And we would have, you know, an improved world that didn't leave room for Trump and others to sort of snatch, you know, some of our nominal, you know, or imposed leaders.
Yeah, no, I think that's a good point. I mean, I want to kind of bring it back to the Ice Cube thing on that point. A couple different threads here, but I mean, that's kind of how I felt about that. I thought people were honestly being too hard on him. I mean, full disclosure, I did not actually read his plan, so I don't know what's in it, but and I'm not endorsing it, but it seemed like he just more or less put something on the internet and said, if anyone's interested, you can contact me. Only one party contacted him. He had a conversation, and you know, whatever, they tweeted it out, we had the conversation, but it was almost presented as if he had done something like, I don't know, like he had snitched on a slave rebellion or something because he had decided to have this one phone conversation that anyone could have called. And the idea that, you know, I don't even really know exactly how to say it. It just seemed ridiculous to me. Like on the one hand, like if one person calls you and there's two people, what are you gonna say? And the assumption from the Biden campaign that's sort of implicit in that is, why would we talk to Ice Cube? And they may be right in some ways. Like I don't think these endorsements mean or do anything 9 times out of 10 in terms of voters. But the way it was presented in terms of like the vitriol towards him, to me almost seemed indicative of an important reality about quote unquote black politics and how independent political action in the black community is often received by the gatekeepers within our own sphere.
Well, at the risk of speaking for him, I'm definitely not. I want to use the example of Derek Hamilton, the you know, the famed and noted black economist, formerly, you know, supporting and working with the Sanders campaign, who did work with Ice Cube on his proposal and self-promotion, had a chance to sit down with me at imixwhatilike.org for our classes at Morgan State as well, to talk some about that. I invite people to go check that out. But part of my point here is that the Biden campaign, you know, the response to Cube and all of these folks is disingenuous, because the Biden campaign and their, you know, punditry spokespeople in, you know, liberal commercial media wouldn't sit down and accept the platform of even Bernie Sanders, which Derek Hamilton helped promote and progress. So then Derek Hamilton is left sort of to this extent excluded from the process. And is left to talk to Ice Cube, who is thinking, why wouldn't I want to sit down with one of the most famous economists of the black condition in the country, thinking maybe this is what logically I should do, is I'm just a rapper. So I'm going to go talk to Derek Hamilton, who does help him put this proposal together, which includes some things, again, that he talked with us a little bit about, that talks about, I think, some healthcare provisions and some aftercare, some provisions. But to my bias or focus does, to your point, put an emphasis on black business and capital infusion. But my point is that if the Democratic Party isn't going to listen to Hamilton, isn't going to listen to Sanders, isn't going to listen to its own progressives within its own party, and is certainly not going to listen to the so-called radicals and grassroots organizers in the black and other parts of other communities in the country, then this is what they're saying: you have no other place to go to. And in fact, if you go and look at some of Biden's own, performance out there on the campaign tour, he's literally told people, he's on camera telling people, if you don't agree with me, then go vote for Trump. And people are saying, well, I just want to talk to you about your immigration policy. I just want to talk. No, just go vote for Trump. So then you can't turn around and then send your liberal media spokespeople out to condemn him for going and doing just that, or at least going to talk to Trump or anyone else going to talk to whomever. So again, I don't agree with what Ice Cube and them are doing. I don't think that I think they're talking to a lot of conservatives and within the black community as well, that I'm not thrilled with. But those of us on the real grassroots radical left haven't done enough to build ourselves up organizationally. And certainly this liberal media commercial, class of pundits hasn't done any real service in explaining the condition or the realities or the political situation, or certainly what their own party is or is not doing. So,
yeah, I think that's a very, very relevant point. I mean, the air of unreality sometimes around the what Biden's going to do for the black community. I mean, it's unbelievable. I think Kamala Harris did something last night with Bernie Sanders or the night before about the $15 an hour minimum wage. And the thing I just could not get out of my mind is Terry Sewell, who's a relatively prominent member of the Black Caucus from Alabama, former Wall Street person herself, that when the Democrats put in a messaging bill, this is maybe last year, the year before that, around $15 an hour, it came from Representative Bobby Scott. Like, so messaging, never gonna pass the Senate, never gonna be, you're basically just laying down a marker. She spoke up against a $15 an hour minimum wage and said that would destroy business in Alabama, which is obviously totally fake. But then she appears at the DNC as a prominent Biden surrogate, but then they wanna be on there last night with Bernie Sanders talking about, we're gonna give you a $15 an hour minimum wage. I mean, there's no real point there, but it just, like, the sort of bait and switch element of it. And then people think, I can't imagine why such a huge number of people either wouldn't vote or just feel totally disaffected from the political system.
And then we already see that the machinery has already started preparing the blame for black men in particular, right, if Biden doesn't win. I mean, and to me, this is patently ridiculous. Now, admittedly, my bias, I don't support either two major parties, and haven't since I voted for Bill Clinton in 1992. That's the last time I voted for. So I admit that. And I admit that I voted for the Green Party this time, and that the only struggle I had this election cycle was whether to vote for them or Gloria LaRiva and Leonard Peltier. And I only chose the Green Party, honestly, because they're closer to the 5% threshold. I'd like to see them get that and get federal matching funds and become more of a thorn in the side of this two-party system as much as possible. But again, the point being that the Democratic Party and their policy platforms have been woefully insufficient for such a long time. Biden has been very clear. He's going to increase funding to the police. He's going to continue fracking. He's going to not do anything to upset Wall Street. He's very clear in healthcare. His party has not even said we're going to accept a $2 trillion package from Trump for his stimulus because we don't want to give him a victory before the election. I mean, meanwhile, people are starving and being evicted. And I mean, it's just absurd. They're not going to end the wars that Biden's former President Obama extended beyond even Bush. I mean, the amount of hypocrisy is incalculable, actually. And so that's why, anyway, just to bring it back selfishly mm-hmm. to my own work, that you know, I focus so much on myth making and propaganda because the economics of our situation are pretty easily understood and made plain, and are made plain quite often by economists and people more well trained in that than me. The only issue left for us is really to get through a lot of this massive propaganda and mythology that is constantly promoted to discourage us from doing what we know we need to be doing, which is radically organizing ourselves at grassroots levels, where electoral politics are just one component of that array of organization and struggle.
No, absolutely. Not selfish at all. The Myth of Black Buying Power by Dr. Jared Ball. Fantastic book. You can get it for free, F-R-E-E, free, at imixwhatilike.org. Dr. Jared Ball, thank you so much for joining us here on Breakthrough News.
Anytime. Thanks again for what you and your colleagues are doing there.
No, of course. Hats off to you. That's going to do it for us here on Breakthrough News. Live conversation with Dr. Jared Ball here discussing a whole range of things. If somehow you just tuned in, you can go back and watch the whole thing. It's very worth it. Go to imixwhatilike.org and get his new book, The Myth of Black Buying Power. And as we always say here on Breakthrough, don't just watch us, join us.
I mix what I like, 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 what I like.